The Ringer Gambling Feed is your one-stop shop for all things betting throughout the NFL season, from week one all the way through Super Bowl 58 in Las Vegas. We have you covered every which way. We got our favorite futures, we got props, we'll discuss the lines, and of course, we'll throw in a few parlays. That's a given. So whether you're a sharp or square better, we'll be breaking it down in terms hopefully everybody can understand, and we'll try to win some money along the way. So be sure to subscribe to the Ringer Gambling Feed on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Ringer's Philly Special presented by FanDuel. April showers bring a loaded sports calendar, and FanDuel is the place to bet on it all. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and get paid instantly when you win. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Welcome to the Ringers Philly Special. Philadelphia, your football team stinks. Garbanzo beans, they got nothing. An all-time collapse, 10-1 to 11-6. Lost to the Cardinals, lost to the Giants, no life. And now going on the road somehow, as road favorites to face the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Benjamin Solak, how are you doing?
Not great, Chief. Gosh, they're so bad. They're so awful to watch. They're terrible. They're not good. They're going to lose to Baker Mayfield in the playoffs. I'm going to have to watch the entire thing professionally and fanally, and it's horrible.
All right, let's just come out firing. Is Nick Sirianni this team's head coach in week one of the 2024 season? Where are you? Probably,
but if you asked me last week, I would have been like, yeah, 95% for sure. And now I'm like, okay, 70, 75, right? Like, the leverage, the moving target is in how the players feel about him and how the players feel the degree to which he's at fault. Like, if he retains control of and favor of the locker room, then it's fine. You obviously need new coordinators on both sides of the ball. But if the team still wants to play for Sirianni, then cool. If the team doesn't, which, like, I would say the general vocal thrust is that they do, but you never know, like, if they're selling a bill of goods or not. If the sense that the team does not want to play for Sirianni is providing nothing.
Does it matter if they want to play for Sirianni if when they're playing for Sirianni, this is the product they're putting out?
Well, when they're playing for Sirianni, over a large sample, they've been better than bad, right? Yeah. They've been better than average. They've been good. And so you that's why, like, to me, what's interesting is the degree to which the nature of the locker room has changed on him. Because you and I have covered enough teams enough time to know that a team can be bad, both like starting the season, be straight bad and be bad for a long time, or start strong and end up disappointing. And in that process, still retain a lot of faith in their head coach. Like we have seen that happen across the league many, many, many times. I'm just watching across the league, and I'm watching, like, Mike Tomlin's Steelers dropped three in a row and just circled the wagons and won their games and made it to the postseason. The Minnesota Vikings, right? They lost four in a row, and, like, okay, this is like a collapse, right? No quarterback, but you don't, like, Kevin O'Connell still, like, there's belief around Kevin O'Connell. Like, the team very clearly is still in on Kevin O'Connell. there are ways to have losing stretches, and then for the head coach to circle the wagons, to get a win under your belts, and to say, like, all right, no, don't worry about it, we're a good team. The Eagles have lost 5 of their last 6, and at no point has it seemed like Nick Sirianni is doing anything about like that, helpfully, in a constructive way. And so that's where you're like, okay, like what a good coach would be doing here is he would be finding a foothold, stopping the skid, surviving, and finding a way to start climbing back uphill again and just and chug along. And like they haven't found that. Not only have they not found it, it's unbelievable how exactly the same they look every single week, dude. It is like win, lose, Tyrod Taylor, Tommy DeVito, playoffs, second seed, third seed, 5 seed, NFC. Like, I don't care about any of it. Obviously, I do. I care a lot about it, but I don't care about any of it. It's watching the team come out with the same John week over week. They're getting beat on the same offensive calls against the same defensive looks. I have no idea how Jalen Hurts can take himself seriously back there, acting surprised by every blitz look. What do you think's going to happen? I don't know how we got Nolan Smith and Josh Sweat dropping into coverage. This was last week we were losing this. What did you do on Tuesday? What were you up to? How are you running with the same stuff? It's so pathetic.
Very good. Great way to start us off. I'm with you on Sirianni. That's where I was. I mean, all the talk the last few weeks, I was going, everybody settle down, zoom out. I didn't say settle down because you don't have to settle. You shouldn't settle down. This is an all-time collapse. I mean, this is unbelievable to start out 10-1 and now be 11-6 and legitimately suck. Like, you're not getting bad bounces. It's not like you got, you know, 20 people got injured. Like, your team stinks and you have no answers. That's exactly what this looks like. So that's that. But I was in the camp of, all right, zoom out. Big sample. Sirianni's like winning percentage over 3 years. They're going to make some changes on the coaching staff. They'll try to figure out what went wrong this season, figure it out for next year. But give me a break. He's not going anywhere. I don't know. Now, if they go to Tampa next week and it's another performance like this, by the way, they lost to the Giants 27-10, if you care what the score was or didn't watch the game. If they have a performance like this again next week in the playoffs, now all of a sudden it becomes at least a conversation. In my opinion, I mean, if you're Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman and you're looking at this, it's exactly what you said. They have had some time here to come up with answers. Like, they have had, what, 6 weeks here, an easy part of your schedule. Remember, I remember a time when we were saying, oh, they got the Cardinals. They got Giants coming up. You can figure some things out. You win those games. You go into the playoffs feeling better about yourself. Whoops. That didn't happen. So they've had time to figure it out. And the big button they pushed when they thought things were collapsing, again, I hate to repeat this every podcast, but it bears repeating when you make a move this stupid, was to give Matt Patricia more power. Hand the defense over to him. I mean, did you watch? Oh, wait. Oh, what's that? I think Kevin Byard just got home on that blitz from the first quarter. So, like, I just see him over there. Yeah, he finally crossed the line of scrimmage. I mean, this is like, they were bad under Sean Desai. There's no doubt about it. They are bad in a very different way over the last 4 weeks. They cannot get lined up. They don't know what their jobs are.
They lost a pre-snap motion.
And this isn't like a Mike McDaniel, whip this up in the lap. Look at, this is like a regular every single team puts a person. How do you not know when a guy's going in motion what to do? They're running into each other. Nick Morrow's mouthpiece is not in his mouth when the ball is snapped like 12 times a game. Hey, Kevin Byard, shut up. Bump him over. Push him over. But now you go. All of a sudden, the guy's running wide open downfield. I mean, this is laughable defense. I tweeted it out, and I think it's true. I think this is the worst defensive football I've seen in my lifetime from an Eagles team, like the last 2 weeks. You let the Cardinals and the Giants, two teams that came in, we were going to pick in the top 5 in the draft, score touchdowns on 7 of 10 drives. And again, there's nothing fluky about it. You didn't get a bad defensive pass interference call. You didn't have 6 guys out due to injury. Like, they are killing you. This is atrocious, horrible defensive football that gives you no chance pretty much against any opponent. So you add all that up, and you're Howie Roseman, and you're Jeffrey Lurie, and we know Howie Roseman's going to look at this and say, I gave them more than enough to put out a better product than they're putting out right now. Jeffrey Lurie probably feels the same way when he looks at the talent on the roster, and they've had some time to figure this out and they've come up with no answer. So that's the reason I led the show like that, because I do think that's at least a conversation now that's fair and that could potentially be happening a week from now if they lose to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in an embarrassing way.
Yeah, since week 12, they're third worst in the league in defense success rate. They're second worst by EPA per drive surrendered defensively. The Commanders are the only team that's worse. And the Commanders had a DC change in the middle of this year, but then traded away their two best defensive players. The Eagles traded for Kevin Byard, yeah. Right? The Eagles thought that the defense was going to get better. You bring up, like, okay, Patricia, like, should we bring this up again, yes or no? It's funny because, like, it's not that, like, the defense was bad under Desai, and they're bad under Patricia. It's not like Patricia took, like, a middling defense and ruined it. It was a bad defense, and now it's even worse. But I would say, though,
they were around, like, 20th to 22nd, and they had played a very tough schedule. And under Patricia, they have played Drew Lock, Cutlets, the Cardinals with Kyler Murray, and Tyrod Taylor. I mean, so there is, like Desai, at least it was against Josh Allen. Like, he got lit up by Sam Howell, don't get me wrong, but it is a little different. Yeah.
No, I'm with you on that. But what's more meaningful to me is that, because you said, like, oh, you know, they had 6 weeks to figure this out, and it's true. But that's the 6 weeks of, like, losing football. They had more time than this, right? You and I were hopping on this pod being like, this is not a 10-1 team.
Yeah.
Like, they're, like, point differential-wise, this is not a 10-1 team. So we look like they had more than 6 weeks because they had a chance to be honest with themselves about what was going on offensively and defensively and say, this is what we have to improve. This is where our bread is buttered. We're gonna focus more on this, and we're going to cut this out of the playbook, and we're going to get, you know, Kelee Ringo some snaps now so that way he's better in week 18. Like, they had a ton of stuff that they could have done. And the only measurable thing that, like, I have heard about or read about or been privy to on film is that they gave Matt Patricia control over third down, and then they gave him control over the whole defense, and third down got worse and defense got worse. But it's the fact that they spent all of October and November talking about, we're not playing our best ball, and the only thing that happened was a defensive coordinator switch that was very clearly dead in the water, that very clearly was never going to have an impact. At no point was, and we replace him with Matt Patricia, going to bring a positive thing. So you brought nothing, right? You had, like, there are teams that start the year like 4-4 and haven't played their best ball yet. And they know, okay, we have to get desperate. We have to attack. We have to make changes. We're going to prioritize touches for this young player, and we're going to move on from this older player, and we're going to make these changes schematically, and we're going to try these new plays, because they understand, like, all right, we're getting to the middle of the season here. We got to win some games. We got to establish positioning. The Eagles were 7-1, and on every Sunday they told us they weren't playing their best ball, and then they spent the next 6 days with a thumb up their butts, and they didn't do anything. And, like, that is on coaching, that is on leadership. All they did was tell us that it's not as good as it should be, and it should get better. And then nothing ever changed except for Matt Patricia, which is the opposite of change of, like, a good change. It's the dumbest change ever. And so it's very difficult to feel bad for them. How, you didn't see this coming? Obviously, none of us thought 11-6. None of us thought lose to the Cardinals and the Giants back-to-back weeks. But we all knew this team wasn't that good. Wasn't as good as they were perceived to be when they were 10-1. And now, like, that the rug's pulled out from under them, you're like, yeah, absolutely, you slipped on the banana peel. It's been there the whole time.
Yeah, it's well said. It's also what you said about every. I mean, I don't understand, how could they go in, like, what do they, when they go into a film session tomorrow, and they cue up the big blitzes from the Giants, and they correct it and say, like, how is that still a thing that's happening? I don't understand. It's week 18. Jalen Hurts faces more big blitzes than any other quarterback in the NFL, and they still have zero answers schematically from the quarterback, from the design, from the coaches for dealing with those. They do not burn opponents on those. It's week 18. Again, you have more reps against this than any team in the NFL, and you still don't. You're facing a defensive coordinator. This is literally all he does. He's been doing this for like a decade. In the NFL, you're going to face these blitzes, and you look lost out there. You have no idea what to do against them. You're getting free rushers, and you're taking sacks over and over again. Like, how do you even, with a straight face, have a film session on a Monday or a Tuesday saying, all right, they got us here, but here's what we're going to do next time. What? You had that conversation in week 2. You had that conversation last year. You had that conversation 2 years ago.
After the 2021 wildcard round. It is 2024.
How are you throwing stuff against the wall when that I don't understand how you could even look at that with a straight face. So you're right about that. I mean, offensively, A.J. Brown goes down. Devontae Smith doesn't play in this game. Just a complete disaster. I don't know. A.J. Brown was standing outside the locker room greeting everybody as they came off the field after the game. Who knows what his status is next week against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I had no issue, honestly, with the way they handled playing the starters early on, see what's happening in that Cowboys game, and then decide from there. That Cowboys Commanders game ended up a blowout. Early on, I don't want this to get lost in history that, no, the Eagles sat their starters in week 18. No, that was like a competitive game. By the time it was 24-0, the Eagles were losing to the New York Giants. Like, they had something to play for at that time, and they came out. It's a come out, Ben. Last week was like, felt like rock bottom. I said last week, this is the loss we're going to remember when we talk about the 2023 Eagles 10 years from now. It's this loss against the Cardinals. You give up four straight touchdown drives to end the game, and you lose as 10.5 home favorites. To then come off that game and come into this game and be down 24-0 to a team that has no motivation to win the football game. I mean, that's why I'm having that Sirianni conversation. That's not like a personnel skill. That's like a something is wrong internally. And you're going to hear a lot this week probably from people saying, players quit. I don't believe generally from my experience covering the NFL is players almost never quit. They're almost always giving full effort. That to me just looks like a team where the coaches have no answers. The players know the coaches have no answers. And that's why it looks like what it does out there on the field, where you're getting killed by a New York Giants team that has nothing to play for and a New York Giants team that stinks.
A bad team with no interest in beating you unless you gave it to them. And they just laid down and got walked over, man. So very, very, very pathetic. So very, very, very sad. There is like, I'm looking, so Eagles Bucks next week, right? And I'm fascinated.
Hold on, let's frame the conversation. Okay.
Eagles Bucks next week. I'm fascinated to see what the line is going to be. I'm fascinated to see what the matchup's going to be, and what's FanDuel going to post for the money line, whatever. I'm looking at it, and obviously in the back of your head, you're thinking, okay, this is such a clear trap spot. Like, everybody's going to be on the Buccaneers because Eagles have been so abysmal the last few weeks. Like, you know, it's going to be way too easy for the Bucs, and the Eagles are going to come out and, like, you know, look better than this, because they're clearly a better team than this. So, like, that's the first thought you have. But then the second thought you have is just, what can you possibly build on? Like, what single thing can you say this week? Well, at least we X. So now we'll that'll be okay. They're not running the ball well. Hurts is playing poorly. Hurts playing poorly for the last few weeks now. People got really mad at me for pointing out that Hurts played poorly.
I disagree with that. We could talk more about that. I don't think he's played poorly the last few weeks.
I should say last few. He was good against the Cardinals.
I thought he had a pretty good stretch.
Against the Cardinals, he was good. I was thinking over like the 6-game losing streak. He's had some rough games. I should have said the last few weeks. He was good against the Cardinals. But Hurts had a bad game here. Devontae's hurt. Devontae's banged up. AJ Brown is hurt. Like, what are you building on? Like, what are you possibly defensively? Same thing. What are you possibly saying? Like, all right, like, this is what we're gonna hitch our wagon to. Like, how do you walk out against the Bucs with any semblance of belief? I don't know how they do it.
Well, let's we'll look at that line. We'll come back. We'll talk. Talk about a playoff game with maybe the least juice in my lifetime, an Eagles playoff game. We'll get into it a little bit when we come back.
The NFL regular season is wrapping up, but there's still time to get in on the action with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place a $5 bet. That's $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. Wild card weekend, two bets I like that I'm looking at so far. Packers +7 on the road against the Cowboys. I think they can keep that close. And then the Buccaneers money line +110 against the Eagles makes a lot of sense to me. The app is so easy to use, and there are so many different ways to bet, like live same game parlays, finding bets in the new Explore tab, making a parlay in the Parlay Hub, the best way to find popular parlays, and more. So visit FanDuel.com/RingerPhilly and make your first bet a layup. FanDuel, an official partner of the NFL. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. $5 pregame moneyline wager required. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com.
All right. We are back on the Ringers Philly special. By the way, Jalen Hurts injures his finger in this game. So I don't know. Maybe he'll be fine. Maybe he won't. Maybe he'll, you know, play, but will not be the same guy. I mean, they get hit with injuries in this game. I think Cam Jurgens had an injury. Reed Blankenship had an injury. So in a game, Sidney Brown had an injury. So in a game where you're hoping, all right, just get out of it healthy, they actually didn't get out of it healthy. And obviously the AJ Brown one is the biggest thing. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I just, they're 2.5-point favorites. So like, and it's so wild to come up. like if you're, you must be laughing if you're listening to this. Like you watched this team the last 2 weeks against the Cardinals and the Giants, and they are going to Tampa on the road as 2.5 point favorites against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I mean, the Bucs did not look good today. The Bucs won 9-0 against the Carolina Panthers. The Panthers had a potential touchdown where DJ Shark did the thing where you fumble as you cross the goal line and the other team gets the ball. So they had that. And I forget, they had one other thing that, oh, they had like a big, they had a touchdown run that was called back because Darius Marshall did not line up correctly on the line of scrimmage. By the way, the best part of the show is there's a fly in Solak's office, flying around him, and watching him have to navigate this podcast while this fly is flying around his head.
I don't know where it came from.
Finally, something's entertaining.
I am furious.
There you go. What are you gonna do? You get the bath towel or the kitchen towel and just go whap? What's your move?
Well, the problem is he keeps landing on like my studio light and my monitor, so I can't thwap him, right? So I gotta wait till he's down. He's been on a flappable location a couple of times. I like the Eagles have not gotten the job done, all right, in the clutch moments.
Listen, if you need to do that during the show, I don't think there's going to be any other clip from this show that's worth posting. So feel free to go ahead
for content
and do that.
No, I just like when I look up and I see it running across my face. I'm super into that.
Yeah, I'm very entertained by that too. All right, so I mean, yeah, at first, like as the first quarter was unfolding, Ben, I started my like little doc for the podcast, and I was like, okay, Bucks section. We'll talk about the Bucks. What are the Bucks good at? How do they? And now I'm like, if you're listening to this, you cannot possibly care about hearing about any of that right now. The Bucks are a mediocre team.
I'll say this: the Bucks are really well suited to beat the Eagles structurally, right? Because they're already a blitz happy team defensively. They're built to get you into third and pass and then blitz you. And that's what they're going to do. And it's going to bother Hurts. I can guarantee you it's going to bother them. They don't have solutions. I am positive. Offensively, they have matchup winners in the passing game, right? In Mike Evans on the outside, Chris Godwin in the slot. So they can, you give them man, they're going to throw to Mike Evans. You give them zone, Chris Godwin's going to work middle of the field. Those linebackers can't play. And they also throw the ball to Rashad White, their back, which if you're able to glove everything up, those throw the ball to the back, then they'll ask you to tackle. And you're not going to tackle because the Eagles back seven can not tackle. So you can hassle Baker with pressure, right? You can that's a great way to beat Baker Mayfield. Eagles haven't generated legitimate pressure from their pass rush in the last 4 or 5 weeks.
4 or 5 weeks? 15, 16, no, like 9 weeks, I would say. The first 5, 6 they did, yeah.
And so it's the Bucs are very nicely positioned to beat the Eagles team as they're currently built. I think they match up great in Philadelphia.
Baker Mayfield came into the day with a rib injury and he was limping basically the entire second half. And limping, I still think
after his bad plays, he was limping. After his good plays, he was weirdly not limping. It was a curious thing.
I think I would still, if I had to pick right now, the Bucs. I mean, Tyrod Taylor goes 23. I'm back to Tyrod Taylor. Remember, he was Tyrod. Then he said he wanted to be Tyrod. Then everyone forgot when he came back this year. And at least I forgot. And I was going back to Tyrod. It's actually Tyrod. Tyrod Taylor, 23 for 32 for 297 yards, averaged 9.3 yards per attempt, and was sacked once in this football game. The New York Giants, an abysmal offense all season long, had 415 yards of offense in
the
football
game. Best game of Tyrod Taylor's career by success rate, in which he takes
is
at least
that 15. True?
In which he takes at least 15 dropbacks, because he's been like in for
garbage
time.
That's still good.
He had like a game that he started and he got hurt. But at least 15 dropbacks, best game by success rate.
Oh my God. How old is he? How? He's having this now? You know how many crappy defenses he's played?
He is 34 years old.
Oh my God.
Now, the sample of games with him at least 15 dropbacks is like way smaller than you think. It's like
it's still something.
Yeah, like 30, but still, it's hilarious.
Oh my gosh. That is wow. That's incredible. So I don't know what Baker Mayfield's going to do, even if he's playing with, I don't know, how many ribs do you need to play? How many like intact ribs do you need to play?
With how much the Eagles hit the quarterback? One, maybe two.
Yeah, he should be fine. I mean, Chris Godwin could have 19 catches next week. I don't know. What's the record for a playoff game? Chris Godwin is just going to be working the middle field all game long. Eagles will not be able to get lined up here. By the way, I mean, Zach Cunningham returned in this game. I mean, Zach Cunningham, the legend of Zach Cunningham now, because of it's like, this is Zach Cunningham. Zach Cunningham is not saving you.
When Zach Cunningham's not on the field, we're always like, man, they're missing Zach Cunningham. And then he's on the field, it's like, this is the guy they were missing?
Yeah.
It's so bad. Morrow is worse now than he was in week one. I don't get that at all. He's just gotten progressively worse as the season's gone on. Bradbury is
oh, he's done.
Mega chalked. It's really rough for Bradbury. Like, they're targeting Bradbury in the passing game. Like, oh, Darren Waller against Bradbury. We like that matchup. And he's presumably your high-paid guy in your corner one with Darius Slay out. Tristan McCollum got some snaps in this game, man.
But Bradbury's got beat on a slot fade, right? He's getting beat vertically by a tight end. Like, this was supposed to be your outside cornerback starting this year. Maybe just
mega chalk.
30-year-old cornerbacks, like, just chill with those guys.
Reed Blankenship tackles well, and Kevin Byard is also a decent tackler. And that's in the back seven, those are the only players the Eagles have who can tackle. No one else can tackle. Right? Nick Morrow and Cunningham ran into each other on the one Wandell Robinson curl, right? They just tackled one another.
Oh, yeah.
And Wandell's gone like smoke. They've never seen a guy move that fast in their lives. They're holy smokes. He's gone. He can teleport. He's Nightcrawler. It's just Wandell Robinson.
They're so slow. They are slow. They are unathletic. Yeah. They have to lead the league in running into each other. I mean, that just shows up on film every single week. Two guys running into each other for one reason or the other. And also, like, I like Blankenship a lot. Blankenship is not playing his best football right now. And also, everybody remember this. Next time Howie Roseman makes a trade and gives up nothing, and your friends are texting you, Howie season, and oh, how are the Eagles? Oh, they did it again. Oh, they just remember that when the team gives nothing up, that means that that's the most the other team could get for the guy. And that means you should probably temper your expectations for the guy, because he's not here to save your season. Okay, let's all remember that next year whenever they make whatever trade they make. We buried the lead here. Solak, I mean, I think the goal today was you get Quez Watkins going. You get his confidence. I mean, 8 for 93. And
11 targets for Quez on the day. 11
targets. All right, we need to get
Clips. Let me make something very clear. Very clear.
Okay.
If the football was live, all right, if it was a close, meaningful game, on the Quez Watkins touchdown, Dane Belton, the safety, would have taken his head off, all right? And he just didn't hit him because it's garbage time and it's backups, and Dane was just playing at 75%. That's the right thing to do. But if anybody's like, wow, what a play by Quez, no shot. Dane Belton let him have the ball. I want that to be on the record.
All right, Cliff, come in. Where do you want to start? I know you, even before we start, Cliff texted me the game. He's like, I need a minute for the pod, which is rare. That usually does not happen. I know when he has something to say. So, all right, go ahead.
First of all, about that Quez Watkins catch, right? The dude finally decides to make a play as the Eagles are down 24-3.
Useless.
Like, the most. That was his first touchdown of the season, if I'm not mistaken, by the way, too. So, our number three receiver.
He had like 40 yards receiving or something all season, didn't he, before this?
So our number three receiver, quote unquote, he was out for a couple weeks though. So let's be fair. But that was his first touchdown of the season, was that garbage play from your boy Marcus Mariota when you said he could have gotten his head blown off, Ben. And I'm surprised he didn't.
Where are you at with Sirianni?
I'm at with Sirianni.
You went Sirianni watch a couple weeks ago.
I was about to say.
People messaged me and said they lost it when that came on, and you were right about that. Now I'm ready to have that conversation. Where are you with Nick Sirianni?
I'm at the point where next week, if we look like garbage, if the Eagles go down to Tampa, which should be basically like a home game for the Birds, by the way, if they look like garbage in Tampa, I'm on the train of like, I'd be cool if Nick Sirianni wasn't back. And this is the kind of stuff that I'm hearing from other people across, you know, just Eagles fans, people I talk to on a regular basis. It's not looking good for our boy Nick Sirianni. Like, we were supposed to be on Gannon watch last week. Now we've completely converted this to Sirianni watch, which is a shame because the guy was likable. He was doing all the pandering, wearing all them Philly shirts, wearing AI
Pander
shirts.
Pander King.
Rocking with the Bryce Harper stuff. Pander King, like you said. But now, I mean, he's just fallen from grace so fast. In a matter of 5-6 weeks, this man has fallen from grace so fast. Like, I have not seen the precipitous drop-off like this ever before in Philly sports history. This is crazy. And on top of that, Howie Roseman deserves blame. Y'all just talked about Nick Morrow and Zach Cunningham, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, you can't get a linebacker in August and think that's going to solve your problems. They're not good. They're not fast. They can't make plays. And then you got Shaq Leonard trying to bring false hope here. He can't even see the field in a garbage game where he have to come in the second half and finally get his reps. And I'm just like, yo, this is a complete mess. So Howie deserves some blame as well, too. But as far as I'm concerned, I feel like Sirianni lost the locker room. No one really trusts him. They don't trust his play calling. They don't trust him as a leader. It's clear and it's evident. Like, they came out there flat. The division was on the line today. The number two seed was up for grabs before the Cowboys obviously ran down on the Commanders today. But it was still up for grabs, and they didn't even care. They showed up half-assed it, almost got Jalen Hurts hurt. A.J. Brown went out limping. Devontae Smith already had his ankle rolled up from last week. Bradbury still getting mossed by tight ends. Zach Cunningham can't tackle. Like, there's a million different issues with this Eagles
Darius
team.
Darius Slay having surgery.
Yeah, Darius Slay. Yeah.
That's a throwback for the regular surgery. Listeners.
And by the way, I saw some stat where this is like the first time in the 16-plus game era, or the second time in the 16-plus game era, where a team started off 10-1 and then only ended up with 12 wins or less. The Eagles are the second team to do this, and the other team was the 86 Jets.
Yeah, I see that from Tim McManus here. Teams that started 10-1 and finish 11-6 or 11 wins or fewer, first team since the 1986 Jets. So you're right. Here are the two things with Sirianni, because you mentioned them. One is, it's true that pretty much no coach with his winning percentage over three seasons who's been to the playoffs twice and to the Super Bowl that I can remember has gotten fired. That's true. It's also true that no coach who has coached a collapse like this collapse has kept their job. So that, like, there are conflicting things here. You can't just be on totally one side or totally the other side, because both of those things are true. That's how rare this is. This does not happen often, where you have this type of collapse, yet you're still going to the playoffs for the third straight season. That's why it's going to be a very interesting conversation.
The thing with Sirianni is what do you do here, right? Like, it's one thing to be able to say, like, okay, there's been a collapse, like, okay, yada, yada, yada. You don't call plays, and the system is not a system.
The
Eagles' offense is not a system. He did not bring, okay, this philosophy from this place. No, they run nine plays, and everybody knows eight of them, and they have no solutions baked in. They have no optionality baked in. If there's not A.J. Brown saving you on a nine ball, this offense doesn't work, okay? So they didn't bring a system. He's not bringing play calling, and you're supposed to bring culture. So, and if culture's not working, the moment we lose to a good team, the moment we get our face kicked in by the Niners, we just can't recover. What are you doing here? That's got to be the question. And that's why, like, he's more in jeopardy than a coach with his winning record would typically appear. At least he's not bringing anything to the table right now.
Exactly. And like you said previously, right? So if he's not bringing anything to the table, doesn't next week matter as to how, like, let's say the Eagles win the game, right? If you win the game, you know, 21-14, I think he keeps his job completely. But let's say you do get embarrassed. Let's say the Buccaneers end up beating the Eagles something like 31-3 or 31-7. It looks ugly, right? It kind of looks like how the Buccaneers beat the Eagles when Jalen Hurts got his first playoff start with Brady. Let's say it looks like that. Is he out the door?
Well, listen, my rule is you never make a head coaching, hiring, firing decision based on the result of one game. I think that's short-sighted. I think either in your head, he is the guy who can get you on track and lead you to a Super Bowl next year or next couple of years, whatever, or he's not that guy. That's all it comes down to. I mean, don't forget, when Jeffrey Lurie fired Doug Peterson, he was all over the place. He didn't know whether he wanted to do it or not. I mean, they held a press conference at the end of the season that included Doug Peterson. They're the only team that does this, where they're talking about, oh, how'd the season go? What are you going to do in the offseason? All this stuff. Doug Peterson's a part of that press conference. And then all of a sudden, Doug Peterson meets with Jeffrey Lurie and they have a conversation, and they were late into the hiring cycle for Nick Sirianni. Guys had already been hired by the time they decided they were parting with their head. So that this is the way they do things. I mean, Sean Desai, they can't just fire Sean Desai. He's sitting up in the booth. He's on the field before the game. Like, what are you doing? If you're going to move on from a guy, move on from a guy. And so they are wishy-washy in that way. And it's Howie Roseman and it's Jeffrey Lurie. Those are the two people who are making the decisions. And I do think, part of this is like I do think it might be as simple as, is he the guy to get us back on track? Because we feel like we're ready to win the Super Bowl right now. Like, it's still a very talented roster. You regardless of how the season ends, they will go into next season, specifically offensively, with one of the more talented offenses, just position by position in the NFL. I'm not saying it's going to be perfect. Who knows? The other sad thing is, like, I mean, Kelce, Graham, Fletcher Cox, who knows, like Lane J. I mean, this could be it for some of the guys who have been around forever for you, and this
that's
is how potentially
that's the unfair. Thing I've been thinking about too. Like, if you make a coaching change, like Kelsey's been looking for a minute to get out, right? If you're going to bring in a new coach, like, does Kelsey want to go through new procedures, new culture, new this, new that, new position, like not new position coach, just Jeff Stoutland's going to stay, but just the general newness of a new a regime? Does he want to do it? Does Lane want to do that? Does Fletch want to do that? Like, if you do new coach, I wouldn't be surprised if you have to really like wash veterans and reload from there, which they've been planning for that and preparing for that.
Yeah,
and
they
making
might need to do that
Tyler
anyway.
Steen picks and Cam Jurgen picks with that in mind. But is still like Jason Kelsey is the sneak. Like, I think he's more of the sneak than Hurts is. And accordingly, like, you might now lose that when Kelsey leaves. Like, there's legit ramifications to those guys leaving the building. When you fire Sirianni, move on to a new guy, they also want out.
That's where it is. Thank you, Cliff. That's the state of the team right now. I mean, I don't have much interest in diving deeper into this Bucks matchup. We can do that during the week here. This is just like you said, Ben, there was a very realistic scenario when they were 10-1 where they came back down to earth. We were pretty much expecting that. We said, I was tweeting out, they're plus 41 point differential is the worst for any 10-win team. Like, we knew there were going to be some losses along the way, that they were going to come back down to earth. That's not what this is. This is a situation where a team, and again, this is, I think, where you really have a problem is when players look at the coaches and they say, these guys don't have answers. They don't know how to help me get better individually, and they don't know how to help us solve our problems and win games. That's exactly what it looked like to me on the field today. It doesn't mean like they don't like Sirianni personally. Like, they might be like, he's cool. His messaging is good. He's been nice to me. AJ Brown said he's loyal. However, like, who on this team has gotten better this season? Like, is there a young player who we say, wow, this guy has really improved and you have something going forward? I'm trying to think about that. Offensively, I cannot think of anybody. You know, if you want to give me...
Swift's gotten worse. Hurts has gotten worse.
I mean, AJ Brown, those guys are like who they are. You know, there's like when they went down, like there's no third receiver who's emerged. There's no backup tight end who's emerged.
I think Landon Dickerson's better this year.
That's probably one. Yeah. And Stoutland.
Yay, Landon.
Yeah.
Shout out Stout. No, that's a great point. Very little development. And
defensively, who is there defensively? There's nobody.
No, absolutely not.
No linebacker. I mean, I guess you could make a case for Blankenship, but
you could say like Ricks or Keeley in the sense
of
like
they
didn't
play.
I mean,
you can't count on those guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Carter's gotten worse. Season's gone on. Davis's gotten worse.
All the defensive linemen.
Red X Sweat. I mean, like, yeah. Yeah. They haven't developed anybody. No. I mean, like, man, they really, like, the more and more you think about it, the more it feels like they almost won a championship last year. All they did, like, the best performance by a losing quarterback in Super Bowl history. Oh, we were so close. Oh, James Bradbury holding call. Kadarius Toney punt return. Oh, Jalen Hurts fumbled in the first half. Oh, we were so close. And they walked in this year with just absolutely no plan for when the NFL punched back, which the NFL always does. They always catch up. Someone gets you, and then other people start iterating off of it, and injuries come, and they compile, and players change, and it always happens. And like, to be a professional NFL team and not be ready for that is very embarrassing. It's very naive. It's really concerning. Now, there's a way you learn from it and you come out of it stronger in 2024. But in order to do that, you got to retain the job. And I think a big part of retaining the job is proving that you deserve that trust and that faith from everybody with the very little time you have left. Because it's lose or go home football. And all you've been doing recently is losing.
They have that's it. They've had no plan B on offense. Like you said, every great offensive coach, every year we're talking about those guys. Oh, look at what Coach X did when this defense did this. Wow, they figured something out over this second half of they have not had that. They just keep doing the same things over and over again and expect, hey, we've got better players. It's going to work. It hasn't worked. And also, like you said, I mean, yeah, you retain the job and you can figure it out, but I don't know. Like, is that like we have not seen anything from Sirianni to suggest that he is a brilliant offensive schemer. So now all of a sudden you're talking about a situation where either it's Howie and Jeffrey saying, let's bring in this offensive coach to work with you, or Sirianni saying, let me bring in this offensive coach. He's really good. And we'll help, you know, we'll build a new scheme, that kind of thing. But those are very, very difficult questions. And I am looking forward to whenever the season ends, I think the Desai thing will probably tell us a little bit more about kind of the power dynamics and whose idea was it to hire him in the first place? Whose idea was it to fire him and go to Matt Patricia? They can say what they want. This is not just Nick Sirianni operating in a vacuum. That's not how the organization works here. So we're going to learn a lot about that in the weeks ahead. All right. Anything else, Solak, before you bid farewell and start writing? What's the column for Monday after week 18? You said it was one you could pre-write a little bit, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, the big thing will be off of Bills Dolphins. That's the big game that hasn't played yet. I'll put my all-pro team in there. Not a lot of Eagles, if we're being honest. It was one.
Kelsey?
And Kelsey, Lane, and AJ, which, I mean, okay. I guess three is a lot. Three is a lot on a typical scale. I guess on Eagle scale, maybe not so much. Got awards, MVP, and the like. Did all that already. That was fun. You have an all-pro ballot or no?
No, I don't have a ballot for anything.
Yeah, most, I mean, I don't have a ballot for anything.
Most disrespected
either.
Old guy NFL content guy in the game.
If I had a real all-pro ballot, I wouldn't be able to function. Do it, my fake one, I'm so stressed. I hate it. I don't know why I do it. Colin will come out writing about the Lions Stafford rematch this week. Excited for that, man. That's gonna be a fun game to watch to soothe
some of the
Eagles.
Playoff games have a lot of juice. I mean,
yeah, Packers, Cowboys, Rams, we'll Lions. They're great.
As we're recording this, we don't know when the Eagles are gonna play. I guess the 4-5 matchup has to be Monday night, right? So it's like either So that's either gonna be Eagles or that's gonna be Browns, Texans on Monday night. So I don't know.
Listen, I just. Prepare to teach your pops how to subscribe to Peacock because this game's getting relegated, baby. This game's getting jammed where the sun don't shine. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, it is the game with the least amount of juice. Maybe, for the midweek, I'll go through all the playoff games from the, maybe since I've been alive and rank them according to the juice. Actually, I don't want to do that. I'm not doing that. All right. I think that's it. Listen, I don't know what else. This is it. We barely talked about the game. There's not much to talk about the game. The Giants jumped all over them. They tried a horrible blitz. Giants got a 33-yard catch to Wandell Robinson. You talked about the play where Eagles players ran into each other and they gave up a big play.
Saquon on the wheel on third down.
Nolan Smith.
Go to bed, dude. What did the Giants end up on third down? Let's look at this. That way I could be depressed for another hour.
Go ahead. Look at that. That Bradbury got cooked by Darren Waller. We talked about that play. That's 17-0.
Giants 6-for-14 on third down. A good day for the Eagles.
Yeah, that's great. That might be their best one all season long. Hurts through the interception. Nice interception by Xavier McKinney. Enjoyed Marcus Mariota's first pass attempt. Interception on the bubble screen. And then Eagles get the ball back there and they take everybody out. There you go. That has been your game recap. Brought to you by Solax Fly. Not the fly on his pants, the fly flying around his head. All right, I got nothing else to say. We're going to go watch Bills Dolphins. We will talk about this Eagles-Bucks game during the week, even if it has no juice, because that's what you do when you have a podcast. So we'll do that. Check out Solak's column on Monday on theringer.com. Solak and I on Monday on Extra Point Taken on the Ringer NFL feed. We'll be talking about coach firings, playoff matchups, all kinds of good stuff. So check that out as well. All right. Appreciate everyone listening. Thank you to Ben Solak. Thank you to Ace Producer Cliff Augustine. I'm Sheil Kapadia. We'll be back during the week on the Ringers Philly Special. Woo!
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino LLC. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Kentucky, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, Vermont, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona, 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. Visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.